How do you do? Jen and Cam feel it would be unkind to present this program without a friendly word of warning. We are about to unfold our true crime podcast, a podcast of lifelong friends who seek to examine crimes which were committed without reckoning upon God. The discussion will be frank, and the subject matter will be of a grim and violent nature. I think it will thrill you. It might even horrify you. So, if there are young children listening, or if you feel unwilling to subject your nerves to such a strain, now is your chance to... Well, we've warned you.
Jen.
Hi, Cam. How are you?
I'm pretty darn okay. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Really well.
Anything new?
Oh, no. Not really. Same old, same old. It's summertime and...
It's hot. And I don't like it.
I know.
I don't like it.
But you like not being in school. It's nice. You know, although my youngest daughter has to do summer school and she begs me every day not to go.
I've been subbing, and I don't know, I think I forgot to tell you the story, but it cracked me up. So this little boy got in trouble. This is kindergarten. Lord help me. All the respect for kindergarten teachers right here, man.
Right, because you normally teach seniors, right?
Yes. So this little boy comes out, and he's like, hi. I go, hi, buddy, what's up? And I'm like, where were you? And he's like, oh, I got in trouble. I go, well, what'd you do? Because the principal walked him out to the playground. We were at recess. And I go, well, what'd you do? And he goes, I got in trouble on the bus last night. I go, oh, what happened? He goes, well, my hand, it accidentally hit another kid's face.
Aw, I hate when that happens.
I was like, okay, buddy. And he just said it with just sheer determination. Like, it was just, you know, I'm sorry that you ran into my fist, right? So, little cutie. They're cute as can be, but boy, woo.
Yeah, they're high energy. So,
I can't even remember how much work they were. You know, so
yeah.
Kudos to kindergarten teachers everywhere.
Kudos to all parents and teachers. All deserve a slap on the back, not the face, on the back. That's awesome.
My hand accidentally hit his face. I have a case for us today.
Yep.
All right, here we go. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
An anonymous phone call comes into police in October of 2002. On the other end of the line is a man who states he's been hearing rumors, and the rumors were so strong, he felt the need to call the police. The man said that he'd heard that a body was dumped near Half Moon Bay. Officers go to check out the tip, not really sure if it'll lead to anything. The area the man described is actually part of a national forest. It's a remote area, and at this time of year, October, the fall, it's closed to visitors. When officers arrive, they find a torn piece of material hanging from a tree, and the material kind of looks like it belongs to some material that's lying on the ground nearby. The material, it's blue, sort of like a sky blue, and it looks to be like a blanket or bedspread, something like that, something rather large. It is, you know, the scrap of material is torn off the tree, but nearby it's sort of in sort of a hole, I guess, and it's kind of buried with some dirt, some rocks and leaves on top of it. But as they get closer, it looks like the material, as well as some of the nearby rocks, have blood on them. It's also obvious that whatever this is has been here for a while. Police aren't sure what they have found, but they know it is suspicious, to say the least. They work to secure the scene and call for backup. Detectives arrive and work the scene. As they move the rocks, they know that the 911 call was not just a tip, but was actually responsible for leading investigators to this body, meaning that that was not a rumor, it was all true. Under the debris, officers find the body of 17-year-old Gwen Amber Rose Orejo. Her body had been outside for a long time, and it was clearly not in good condition. Animals had torn apart much of her body, but what was clear was that the wound on her head was indicative of blunt force trauma to the head. A rope was found on her, and there was a mark around her neck indicating that she had probably been strangled at some point. As officers are waiting for the medical examiner, they continue to look over the scene and they find a purse near the body. Inside the purse is a wallet with a student ID with the name of Gwen Arejo. Gwen had been reported missing just 10 days earlier, and so they were pretty sure that they had just found her body. Her mother, Sylvia Guerrero, reported her missing, but had a feeling that Gwen was not just missing, but dead. I guess that's sort of a mother's instinct. You kind of know.
Mm-hmm.
With a name and now a confirmed homicide on their hands, police get to work. They work the circle, as they always do, and they contact Gwen's best friend, Chrissy Blansett. Chrissy tells officers that they had just spoke the night before she had went missing, but she also added that earlier her and Gwen had argued. They'd kind of gotten a fight, as 17-year-olds do. We know about that, Jen.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually did not speak for a week. But the night before she went missing, they had just made up. So this means that Chrissy couldn't really give police a lot of information about what Gwen was doing the week prior to her murder. But she did have some information that they thought may be useful. The two had been tight for a long time, but recently, Gwen made some new friends, and this group was a bit, shall we say, different than the people they would normally choose as friends to hang out with. This group of people like to party, hang out late, and get into a bit of trouble. There's a twosome by the names of Paul Merrill and his brother Jose. Now, these boys had their own place. Yes, young and had their own place. Or, to be more clear, they rented it from their parents. And by rent, this is a bit fuzzy. I think they may have actually stayed there and the parents paid the bills. But in either case, it was the place to party and party around the clock. Police find out that Paul, the older of the brothers, fancies himself as a party guru. Although he works a 9-to-5 in Silicon Valley, he prides himself on throwing the best parties around.
Nice.
He's good looking, self-assured, and well on his way to being a success.
So he's cocky. Now he's probably
very, very. All these fellas are.
Oh yeah. We know the type.
We'll get to that.
We know the type.
We do.
Mm-hmm.
His brother Jose was not like his older brother. He's shy. He seemed to ride on his brother's coattails. He wasn't popular with the ladies due to his shyness. Now, unlike Paul, who had a longtime girlfriend named Nicole Brown, Jose seemed to be awkward with the opposite sex. Nicole reveled in the role of being Paul's longtime love. With the revolving door of people coming to all the parties, Nicole was the steady patron, and she was happy to let people know that this was her place too, if only by default. You know the type.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Michael Magidson was a high school dropout who lived at home with his parents, still at 22 years old. Nothing wrong with that. I get it, buddy. But he would only work occasionally. And many who knew him said that he worked to get money, then to get by.
Yeah.
He didn't have a whole lot of ambition. Yeah. Now, he was very good looking and he was quite built. He had a nice physique, and he worked on it. He was very proud of that. Jason Cesares was a friend of both Michael and Jose, and the three of them had been very close since childhood. They had grown up together playing, you know, t-ball, sports, high school, all that stuff. They always hung out, and they were always together at the party place, party palace, party place, whatever you want to call it. Chrissy tells police that she knew Gwen and her outgoing personality, and she was not one to just be a wallflower. She was smart, opinionated, and this did not set well with Nicole. After all, this was Nicole's domain. This was her boyfriend's pad, so by default, hers. And honestly, Nicole wasn't really excited about having a new female around, especially one as pretty and strong as Gwen. There was a slow brewing fight, Jen, and you know what that means. It's all going to come to a head. Because you know why? There can only be two queen bees. Just as predicted, the two girls finally get into a fist fight. The ladies are pulled off each other, but now police wonder if this would be a clue into what may have happened to Gwen. Or perhaps Nicole wanted her dead, or Nicole didn't forgive her for this fight and took revenge. As authorities are waiting for the results of Gwen's autopsy, police decide to go to the Merrill brothers' home. They need to speak with these brothers and see what, if anything, they know. The brothers welcome police in, and they tell them that the fight between Gwen and Nicole was old news, and in fact, they had hung out since. Paul tells investigators that one night they were at a bar, and they ran into Gwen and Chrissy, and that they even hung out together, as a group, all of them, and this was after the fight.
They were old friends, right?
These are the new set of friends meeting up. They're not old friends, right? But this is how Chrissy was able to tell police about Gwen starting to make friends with these new people.
Oh, okay. Okay. Sorry. I was a bit lost.
Paul tells police that they were at a bar and they were drinking, and Paul came up to the ladies and he started to chat them up. And it comes out that Paul tells the ladies that Jose has a bit of a crush on Gwen. Mm-hmm. Flattered as she was, Jose, shy and withdrawn, was not really Gwen's type, but Gwen and Chrissy welcomed the news and sort of brush it aside. As they're having fun, there are another two fellas, and they're friends of Jose and Paul, and they do catch Gwen's eye, and this is Michael Magison and Jaron Nabors. The two men are close friends, and those are the two we spoke of earlier, along with Jason. Now, Michael and Jaron are really good looking, so is Jason. Michael comes from a good family, and he's the one that's, I don't want to say lazy, but not a lot of ambition. Mm-hmm. He liked to work out. He was good looking. 19-year-old Jaron was the youngest of this clique, and he fancied himself the comedian. Unlike Michael, he came from a more humble upbringing, as he was raised in a strict religious house. Jaron was actually very bright, and by all standards, should have had a stellar life. Should being the word, since we do a true crime podcast. Mm-hmm. Chrissy tells officers that they're hanging out, having a great time, and Michael, Jason, Jaron, and the younger brother of the Merrill brothers, named Emmanuel, comes to hang out with them as well. They're all hanging out at the bar. As the party continues, the ladies actually are invited to come over to the house to party, right? Mm-hmm. They comply, and they head over to the house. They continue to throw back drinks and get to know each other. Gwen zooms in on Michael, and the two of them start getting close, much to Jose's dislike. Now, remember, Jose has a little crush on Gwen. Mm-hmm. In fact, they start smashing or mashing or macking, whatever the kids use these days, in front of everybody, right? So they're kind of hitting it off together, literally. Learning this, police now, okay, we need to go talk to this Michael and find out what he knows now. As they arrive, Michael is working out in the garage, lifting weights and grunting, you know. Michael assures them that even though they were hooking up, they were not exclusive. In fact, Michael tells officers that Gwen liked to play around and play around with a lot of people. 17. Come on now.
Well,
Michael claims...
It's all good. No shaming.
But I'm saying 17 is like the world's your oyster. You know what I mean? You got the whole... You got a giant menu. Michael claims that he found out the hard way, as in walking in on Gwen, who was in the raptures of love with Jose. Yep, that Jose, the shy, awkward one that had the crush on Gwen. Michael, who was always lucky with the ladies, claims that because Jose was not really the lucky type, he decided to let Jose have Gwen.
Of course he decided. It wasn't him to decide.
Well, of course. Michael says he was simply, you know, hooking up, and he'd just move on to the next lady, right? The possible suspects are adding up, and while police are still trying to figure this all out, there's a break. Police were able to track that anonymous 911 call that started all of this. It seems there's a college kid who goes to school with Jaron, and like we always have said, Jen, people can't keep their mouth shut. Mm-hmm. When you commit a crime, somebody always talks.
Always.
Jaron, it seems, told a kid about all of this, what had happened, and the poor kid couldn't keep it to himself. Now, he's the person that actually called police. Jaron told him this. He didn't really know if he believed it, but after the 911 call came in and police investigated, yeah, it's all there. So police, they need more. I mean, they have some ideas here. They know there's definitely suspicions around these people, but they need more. So they asked this kid, hey, can you please wear a wire? We need to get Jaron talking once again. So the kid, of course, is freaked out because he's a 19-year-old college
kid.
Yeah. Yeah. Scared
to do it.
But
he does the right thing.
He does do the right thing. Thank you. So this kid goes to Jaron and he gets him to talk. And honestly, it wasn't even very difficult. Jaron said that Gwen was not who everyone thought. When pushed for more, Jaron tells how the boys were all together one night and the topic turned to Gwen. Michael talked about how he had hooked up with Gwen, and Jose jumps in and says, hey, I had hooked up with her too. Now, what they didn't know up until this point, you know how people talk.
Right.
You know, you're supposed to kiss and not tell, but you and I, we always kiss and tell everything, and then we keep going, right?
Well, it's because we've been friends for so long. But people talk. Yeah.
They're like out, you know, hanging out, whatever, and they start talking. Jose knew Michael hooked up with Gwen, and Michael obviously knew that Jose hooked up with her because he walked in on him. But what they didn't know is that neither one of them had actually had sex with Gwen. So they start talking a little bit, and there's like red flags, I guess, going off. Now, Jose said that they didn't have sex, but instead, this is a little listener discretion here for you. Jose said that instead that they engaged in anal sex. Now, Michael hears this, and he's like, wait, whoa, wait a minute. That's exactly what happened to us. What did Gwen say? Jose explains that they didn't have regular intercourse because Gwen was on her period. Totally fine. But then Michael says, wait a minute, I hooked up with her 10 days before you, and that's exactly what she told me. So the two of them are kind of like, okay, something's not right here. This is a little weird. What's going on?
Well, do you remember in high school, there was the one girl who only would do anal sex because she didn't want to lose her virginity before she got married? Don't you remember that?
I do, but I thought it was because she didn't want to get pregnant. I mean, that's just what I assumed.
Oh, I thought it was because the whole, it could have been that too. But yeah, so I mean, that's a thing, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, but it's a thing. Right.
So as Jaren is talking, like spilling all this out, this is, you know, the police are listening to all this and they're thinking, here we go. Like, it's more information, still not enough, but Jaren goes on. And what he says is not good. On tape, he says, for the police to hear, that Gwen lied to Michael and Jose and she deserved it, meaning what happened to her. She deserved what happened to her. Now, this is not exactly Jaren admitting to being involved in the murder, but it does give somewhat of a motive, and that, in fact, they know about her murder. So essentially, what Jaren is saying is that she was murdered, that these people had something to do with her murder, and if that's not bad enough, that she deserved it because she was not who they all thought she was. But we don't know what that means yet.
Scummy.
Police obviously, no, they need to talk to these so-called friends and find out exactly what happened and why. Police start with Nicole, bring her in to the police station. Now, Nicole claims she doesn't know anything about Gwen being murdered, but she does go on to say that the friends group started to question things about Gwen. For example, how fit she was, how big her hands were, how strong she was. But Jaren put it out there. He just, because he was, you know, he fancied himself the comedian. And he just said it out loud in front of everybody. And perhaps it was something they were all thinking. But he just said, do you think she's a man? He had earlier stated that Gwen was not the woman that they all thought she was. And then Jaren goes on to say, perhaps she had tricked them all by not telling them that she was, in fact, a trans woman. The group blew it off and laughing, saying no way. I mean, obviously, Mike and Jose hooked up with her. And Gwen was way too beautiful and self-assured to be not who she said she was, not who she presented herself as, in their mind, anyway.
So they thought she was too beautiful to be a trans woman.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, there's
stupid.
No button.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All of this conversation is taking place before Gwen is about to arrive at this party. And we know, we've talked about the, is it herd mentality, that, you know, two of these men who fancy themselves macho and men's men, right, hooked up with Gwen, and now somebody's questioning if Gwen is a trans woman. So, of course, the, I guess, anxiety, the stress, all of that is kind of circling the herd mentality of, No way, you know, we're too cool, we know what we're doing. Gwen arrives to this party. She was due to come, and she arrived to a group of people who quit talking and kept staring. There were hushed whispers and critical stares, but the silence was broken when Jose blurted out, "Gwen, are you a man?" And that's a quote. I can't imagine the heart palpitation.
Stupidity is unreal.
I just, like, with these, you know, I don't know, scary. So Gwen is understandably shocked and nervous, asking if it was a joke. It was becoming tense, and Gwen tries to make her escape, only to be stopped by Michael. Now, Michael, remember, is 22. He works out. Gwen, 17. And not huge, not a big person, right? Tempers are flaring at this point, and Michael is sure that he's going to find out. He's going to find out what Gwen has. So he drags Gwen into a back room, and he is trying to force her to disrobe. He's trying to take her clothes off, and he's pinning her down. She's crying. She's screaming. When, I guess, I don't know if this is a bad thing or a good thing, Nicole storms in. She can't stand the screaming, and I think Nicole sort of put herself in the situation that Gwen is being manhandled by this big guy, and, you know, I'm going to stop this. This is ridiculous. I'm going to stop this. So Nicole goes in the room, and she talks Michael into leaving. And the whole idea here is that Nicole was thinking, you know, I'm going to talk to Gwen, and she can show me, this is so bizarre, she can show me her lady parts, and this will all be put to rest. Well, instead, Gwen confessed to Nicole that she was, in fact, a trans woman. Nicole exits the room and informs the rest of the group. Now, at this point, Nicole tells officers that she and the rest of the group were okay with this new information. However, Jose and Michael flipped out. Now, at this point, it's a tornado and it is spinning out of control. Gwen was trying to sneak out and Michael punched her to the ground. He gets on her. He starts just punching her in her face, in her chest. While this is going on, Nicole... She left. She's like, I can't see this. I cannot condone this. So she leaves the house, and she actually left poor Gwen behind. This was the fatal mistake for Gwen. She had nobody there to help her. Detectives, at this point, they learned all this from Nicole. They head over to the morgue. They want to see if they can confirm Nicole's story. The cause of death was determined to be asphyxiation from strangling, along with blunt force trauma to the head. The coroner confirmed that although Gwen lived life as a female, she had been born male. Gwen had told her mom and close family at age 14 that she was a girl trapped in a boy's body, and from that day forward, started to live life as a girl. Her family was actually, mother, I love her, she's very accepting. I mean, she's mom. You have to love your kid no matter what. Wow, Jen, my weekend was packed solid. I met a friend for dinner last night, did yard work all day today, and I am ready for a break. How was your weekend?
Oh, it's been pretty good. Last night, my 12-year-old daughter had a sleepover. And you know what? While we were waiting for the pizza to be delivered, to calm them down, I brought out the card game Love Letter by Zeman Games.
That's a great idea. Did they really like it?
Oh, they really like playing the games. And since Love Letter is so simple to learn, they had it down in no time. All you need to do is draw a card and play a card on your turn. And just by using the character's abilities to stay in the round, and you get your letter closer to the princess.
So it's pretty easy to play and understand, right?
Oh, yeah. All you need is 2 to 6 players, ages 10 and up, and 20 minutes. That's all it takes to play. And by the time the game was over, the pizza was here, and they were ready to eat. Love Letter is $11.99 and comes with a velvet drawstring bag, so you can take it anywhere. You can get your own copy of Love Letter at Target, your local game store, or directly through Zeman's web store, ZemanGames.com. That's ZemanGames.com.
Police now have a motive, and they need to get them all for the murder of Gwen. Thinking their best chance would be to get Jaren to flip, since they actually have him on tape, not to mention he's the youngest. The idea is that perhaps he'll rat them out in exchange for a deal. Officers pull him in and they play the recording for him. With the possibility of prison time, Jaren sings like a canary. Jaren tells them that Michael slugged Gwen pretty hard at first, and she was incoherent, but still alive. She was pleading with Michael to stop. Jose then grabs a pan from the kitchen as she is lying on the floor begging for her to live and for them to stop, that she has family. Jose slams it into her head. Jaren said at this point, they drag her out to the garage. Michael places a rope around her neck and strangles Gwen to death. Gwen succumbs to her injuries. At this point, Jaren says he's still in shock, but he's still willing to help his friends. After Gwen died, the men get a blanket from the house and they wrap her body into it. They put her into Michael's truck along with some shovels. Jaren said they drove over 3 hours to a place that they felt was secluded enough. Now, during the trial, the testimony, and I need to interject this here, it was at this point that some of the testimony from the killers deviated. One said that they were all there together. Another one said that Jaren and I believe it was Jason drove another truck to get shovels to meet back up to help, you know, get rid of the body. Another one said it was not a frying pan from Jose, but a shovel. It's a little, you can read the testimony should you care to, but I wouldn't. It's terrible. Once they were at the secluded site, they dug a makeshift grave and placed her body into it. They then made a pact to never tell anyone about this night and what had happened. However, Jaren broke that pact just about a week later when he told one of his college buddies. With all this information, police arrest Jose Merrill, Michael Magistran, and Jaren neighbors, along with Jason Cesares, for the murder of Gwen Araujo. Paul and Nicole were not charged in the case. Jaren Neighbors pleads guilty to voluntary manslaughter in exchange for his testimony against his friends. He was sentenced to 11 years. Michael Magidson was convicted of second-degree murder and was sentenced to 15 years to life. Jose Merrill was convicted of second-degree murder and was sentenced to 15 years to life as well. In a loving gesture and a testament to Gwen from her mother, who always loves her and loved her, after she departed this life, her mother had her name formally changed to Gwen Amber Rose Araujo on June 23rd, 2004. Jen, the reason this case is so important is because it did lay some groundwork for change, for hope. Uh-huh. In September 2006, California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger signed the Gwen Araujo Justice for Victims Act into law. Now, this law limited the use by criminal defendants of the gay, trans, panic defense by allowing parties to instruct jurors not to let bias influence their decisions, and that includes bias towards the victim based on his or her gender identity or sexual orientation. That's cool. Then there's this little tidbit. Mm-hmm. California Governor Jerry Brown signed Bill number 2501 into law in 2014. As the bill was introduced, he cited the murder of Gwen Araujo, as well as the murder of a teenager by the name of Larry King. Now, here's where I have to tell you, if you've not watched the documentary Valentine Road, it is a must-see. Larry was a gay 15-year-old kid who was murdered by a classmate. The trial defense used gay panic defense, which stated that Larry was pursuing this classmate and embarrassing him, leaving him with nothing left to do but kill him.
I hate those kind of defenses. The dead aren't there to protect, to say anything.
Bill 2501 restricted the use of gay trans panic defense by amending California's manslaughter statute to prohibit defendants from claiming that they were provoked to murder by discovering a victim's sexual orientation or gender identity. Thank you, Wikipedia. That's what these men did in Gwen's case. Now, here's how this shockingly ends. Jason Cesares was released from prison in July 2012. Jaren Neighbors was released from prison before 2016. Jose Merrill, and this is how come she is a saint, Jose Merrill was granted parole in 2016 with the support of Sylvia Guerrero, that is Gwen's mom. Michael Magidson was deemed not ready for release at his parole board hearing in 2016. And his request for parole was also opposed by Sylvia Guerrero. Michael was denied parole again in September 2019.
I'm not sad about it.
So that is the case about heartbreaking Gwen. And like I said, if you've not watched Valentine Road, it's working with kids and having kids and just knowing kids. We've all been a kid. If we're sitting here talking today, we've all been a kid. And we all know how kids act differently. And like when they're getting embarrassed, you know, some, if you're getting bullied, some cave in, you know, and like crawl inside themselves and cry. And that leads to terrible things. While other ones are more like, okay, fine, I'm going to own it. And Larry owned it. And he, I think, how he acted was, you know, proud of himself, bless his heart, you know, and I think that, I don't even know, there's no words, but it's shocking, it's interesting, and you know, you think that this was, happened a long time ago, and it did not. It was not that long ago.
The violence against the transgender community has been rising, and it's absolutely astounding. Just some quick numbers that I looked up. In 2017, the New York City Anti-Violence Project claimed that there was 27 deaths of the transgender community, and that was the worst ever year. Until 2020, there was 44 transgender people that were killed because of their gender identity.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's
unacceptable.
It's totally unacceptable. And
I think
it doesn't
bother
your life at all.
I was just going to say that.
You know what I mean? It doesn't make your difference.
If you know Jen and I, you know we're lazy. Okay. We mean well, but we're lazy. And I always think, like, how does this person affect you whatsoever? And even though the boys made out with Gwen, she's beautiful. You know, I don't know what
get
to say.
Get on, say sorry, not interested, and move on with your life. You don't have to kill her in a panic or because you're ashamed or you feel that you will be shamed. That's on you. That's not on her. It just kills me. And I also want to make real quick, 2021, this year, as of May 25th, there's been 27 deaths of transgendered people. It's difficult. It really is. I spoke with a transgender boy, and he can't wait to live his life as a full male.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he is a full male now, but he can't wait to get the surgeries.
Mm-hmm.
And what he's gone through so far is heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm. I had a former student, and he said that he talked to his mom, and he said, here's the deal. I can go on living as I was, but I want you to know I will commit suicide. I can't live like this, or I can become who I truly am. And he is super happy. He does. I mean, he's a great kid. And I think any parent would rather have their child alive than dead. I mean, I just think, you know, isn't that what we want for our kids? We want them to be happy first and foremost, and also make a lot of money and take care of their mothers in their old age. But
their old age. Anybody's sexuality or gender identification or what they identify as, it's only matters to them and them alone.
Like I said, you and I are lazy. I got so much stuff going on in my life.
I'm happy
that people are happy. I'm happy for them. I'm happy. I want them to be happy. I want them to live their best life. And
be
so,
who you want to be.
You know?
And let people be who they want to be. It means absolutely nothing.
Mm-hmm. If it doesn't hurt anybody,
who cares?
Do it. I don't care.
And interesting story. So sad. So sad. Poor Gwen.
Go watch the
documentary. She didn't deserve it at all.
There are two TV shows on her. Let me think. Fatal Encounters and then Murder Among Friends. And then there was a TV movie, a Lifetime movie, that came out in June 2006. And it was called A Girl Like Me, the Gwen Araujo story. And it starred J.D. Pardo and Mercedes Rule. Mercedes Rule was the mom. The mom, like, I watched her on those shows, and she's awesome. I mean, you know, just...
My heart breaks for her.
Strong woman, right?
All those... Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You'll put those in the show notes?
Yes, of course.
So awesome.
So that's... yeah. And like I said, make sure, if you want, Valentine Road. I think it was an HBO... produced documentary, if I'm not mistaken, but, and you know, Larry was just a little sprite of a kid, itty bitty, not even 5 foot, I don't think, 15 years old. And this all also got me thinking about the Jenny Jones episode, and that was the same thing. The guy, it was the secret crushes, and he thought it was the girl next to him, and it was actually a coworker that was a guy. And he was so embarrassed publicly, because that was revealed on TV, that he actually murdered that guy 2 days later. So with Pride Month, we, Jen and I, just kind of thought it was important to kind of shed some light on some of these stories you may not have heard about or known, you know?
And we are big allies of our LGBTQIA+ community.
And if I got anything wrong, just let me know.
So happy Pride. Yeah. And
I
if we did get things wrong... It was totally our lack of knowledge on the situation.
I was asking Jen earlier, we were talking about terminology and things like that. And, you know, with knowledge comes change, which is great. But so I might have got some things wrong. And for that, I apologize.
All right.
All right. Well, Jen, I guess I will see you next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. And until then,
we will be here.
Remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya.
Today's episode was researched and written by me, Cam. For more information about this episode, as well as all the sources I used, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by hosts Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from October Pod VHS. Our True Crime Podcast is executive produced by Nico Vertese and Dick Bain. Make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter at Our True Crime Pod. You can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. If you really like the show, make sure to check out our Patreon at Our True Crime Podcast. Our True Crime Podcast is an OTC production.
Hi, Nico.
Hey, Nico, sweetheart. How are you? I hope my sound's better. And I hope you're not hearing me from
the United States.
Well, Camille's computer either.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So the input and output is still really weird on my computer. I don't know, but at least I think I have the Behringer box working. So I don't know, Nico. I have no idea. So
I mean, we've only been doing this 3 years. Don't expect us to know what we're doing.
I was telling Camille, I go, I feel like a young boy trying to have sex at the first time. I just keep putting in the plugs in holes and hoping it works. So Is this the right hole? Yeah, because I don't know. And when I play it back, it sounds fine in my headphones. So, but I don't have the trained ear as you do. I don't know. I'm confused. Help.
Oh, boy. Chalk that up to always. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Whatevs. Although he works a 9-to-5 job in Silicon Valley, he prides himself on throwing the best parties around.
Is it silicone or silicon?
I always thought it was silicon. Silicone. Silicone is what you put in your body. Silicon is the valley.
Yeah.
Hold on. My ear itches. I got bugs in my ears. I swear to God. Woo-hoo. I do.
Pronounce names.com. This episode, as all of the others, are sponsored by PronounceNames.com.
You know it, buddy.
And we still get them right wrong. That's what kills me. We try, though, man. Yeah. We try.
Here we go. Hold on.
PronounceNames.com.
Cesaris.
Cesaris? Cesaris?
Cesaris. 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 Roll that tongue, right?
Learning this, police now, okay, we need to go talk to this hunky Michael and find out what he knows now. Maybe he has something to do with the disappearance of Glenn.
Did the police call him hunky?
No, I put that in there.
Okay. Didn't know if that was in the official notes.
He really wasn't that cute. Want me to take that out? I didn't think he was that cute, but then again, he's kind of a jerk.
I don't think he's a jerk.
Put that at the end, Nico. I don't want to get in trouble due to my dim wit. Just saying. Let me say that again. Holy crap, I can't talk anymore. Sorry. Sorry. Hold on. Okay. I'm sorry. Let's go back here. I hate people. not these people. Just other people. Yeah. And why did that person change their name? Like, come on. Why'd you do that?
I don't know.
What would be the reason for that, though? You know, if you're going to give this a bad review and create a fake account to do it, and then we call you out on the fake account, you keep the review but then change the name? Like,
yeah.
Okay, thanks. I appreciate that. Yeah. And I'm sorry if you don't know for this, and I'm just going to say it. Jen and I are not perfect. I mean, we like to think we are, And I don't even remember saying this because this was an old episode, but I do remember I had an English teacher, and the way they explained it to me, and this is what I'm guessing because I was so upset when I read this review. I was devastated. And I'm guessing this is what it was, because you learn little tricks about the English language as you go. And I know I'm an English teacher, but I'm not perfect. And I remember the English teacher saying people lie, and so people and dogs lie, rugs lay. So you lay a rug and a person or a dog lie. And that's how they taught that. And so I think I was thinking that out loud. And in a normal episode, we would have cut that out. But it was a Patreon episode, so we didn't. And so that's my explanation for that. And I totally apologize. I'm stupid, but I do use those little tricks to remind, you know, what is it? I before E except after C. And then you have those words that make no sense and whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Except neighbor and way.
Mm-hmm. You cut that. You put that at the end, Nico, if you want. But I'm just saying, I guarantee that's what I did. I didn't even listen to that. So.
Well, and the person who gave that critique didn't listen clearly either, because they said that we compared the 13-year-old to a dog. And that was not the case at all. And thank you to the two listeners that stood up for us on Instagram.
And, you know, and, I think that harks back to our defense. To me, Camille, the English language teacher, when we did, and it was Diadilia, this is how you don't forget stuff, who was the trans woman who was murdered. And I said drag and drug, and I mixed those up, and somebody gave us a bad review for that.
No, that wasn't that review. That was another one. That wasn't that episode, but yes, that was the drag and drug.
No, I'm pretty sure it was that episode, because it was incorrect. At the beach. Her body was found at the beach, and they drug her.
No, it was the one where the guy dragged the body into the garden, the family that was murdered. I forgot the name. It was another one that you did.
Of course it was me, because I have poor grammar and language skills. Of course.
Right. No, but yeah, so we try really hard to get the grammar correct, and we fail a lot of the times.
A lot with words, too. Words are hard, but we don't mean it. And, you know, honestly,
our heart's there.
To people like that, to me, it's more important to know about the Gwyns of the world who are brutally murdered for being themselves and being true to themselves than it is me messing up a word, or you thinking that I'm comparing a dead 13-year-old to a dog. And that's on you. I'm sorry. That is on you. That is not me.
No. Well, so, I tell you what, it's done with. It's over with. We know what we did.
Now I must say, mess it up again on something else. So call me out on that.
We don't have to hang our heads in shame. Our hearts are in the right place.
That's what I said. I'd rather know.
Everybody's
a critic. I'd rather know about little Sarah Reardon or Gwen Araujo or anybody else that we cover. I'd rather know their stories and know that their name lives on for out there. And there's people that are like us, and that we provide the story. And there's people that are thinking about them, even though they're gone.